everybody, and welcome to episode 73 of 90s Court. I'm one of your hosts, Lisa Monahan.
I'm Andy Clodfelter.
He is the Andy Clodfelter man.
I'm not one of your hosts. I'm just here.
He's just my old pal who likes to, I like to call him sometimes and be like, I'm just going to talk to you, and I'm not telling you I'm recording this conversation.
It's like, when you walk into the you're at the doctor's office and like, hey, we're going to have like a student here today observing, is it cool if I sit in? And it just happens to be that you're doing something really uncomfortable and awkward. That's me right now. I'm observing for today, watching how Lisa podcasts.
I'm pretty rusty, it seems. Rusty I might be.
We are so happy to be back. I was like getting giddy at the beginning because we have like a little routine to get lined up and everything like that started. Mm-hmm. And I was just like almost like laughing to myself because I was so excited to be back with all of you wonderful people out there in podcast land. And
that's
Lisa
true.
Pants, of course, who is
and Lisa
very
Pants.
Fortunately alive.
Oh my gosh, Andy. Holy shit. What like serendipitous timing to have taken the week off not knowing that Texas was about to explode.
Yeah, here's the thing. We just like she was planning on going like a trip last weekend. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, oh, we gotta cancel it for this week or whatever, which was a good timing anyways. And then, yeah, then this whole thing happened. And it's like, you know what? I'm really glad because we definitely would have canceled anyways. So.
Yep. I wouldn't have had internet, power, water, energy, happiness, any of my soul left. No. So I'm glad we didn't.
I say a lot of that was gone too. Yeah.
A lot of it was already gone. But yeah, it was just, you know, no power, no water for a few days. And then the boil water just got lifted on Tuesday, Monday, Tuesday. I don't know. It's been buck wild. I will just go on the record saying that losing water is harder than losing power.
Oh.
I wouldn't have thought it to be that way.
It's just one of those things that, like, you just don't think about how many times you just quickly do something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just, like,
yeah.
Wash your hands, rinse something off. Like, you know, like, it just... And then you're just, like, thinking about, like, if you get dirty in some way, like, this, like washing it, like, wiping it with a cloth that's dry is not really as effective. And there's just so... I can't imagine, like, just having no access to water. And being like, well, I've got these water bottles, but they're basically for drinking.
And survival. And I just heard tonight we're expecting a significant gas shortage as well, because all the trucks that could not make it for food delivery were in the same position as all the trucks that had gasoline. So it's just the gift that keeps on giving, guys.
Yeah. Just all year long.
Yeah, but we made it out alive.
I was going to say, it's heated up, so certainly they should be able to start getting out there with stuff, so...
Yeah. The lines are slowing down. Grocery stores are starting to get like kind of stocked again. I'm just really tired of living through these catastrophic historical events is all. Like, I'm wicked tired of it.
I would like to issue a public apology, by the way.
Because
in episode 72 of this podcast, as Lisa mentioned the upcoming snowstorm, I did kind of like in my, hey, I'm from the north and like just you guys, let me tell you about how snowstorms are, said that like, whenever they talk up a big storm, it's absolutely not going to be a problem, and was kind of like laughing at people like stocking up. And I ate those words real bad this week, so egg on my face.
Man, I don't think anybody. I mean, like, I was watching, because I'm a weather person, I was watching the models and I was like, really? Like, really? And I was like, oh, really? And then it came to fruition. I was like, oh shit. I was like, this is real. And then it just had like, it was like three rounds of it. It wasn't just one and done. It was three rounds. So it was a lot, but it's done. And Texas is moving on to it was like 80 something yesterday. So
what?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That is a swing. Jeez.
Yep. And that's why everyone is perpetually sick. So
I can imagine. Well, hey, glad you're back. Glad you're alive.
Me too.
Good. Go Gadget family.
That's right.
So, hey, we're going to go ahead and give some shout outs to our Patreon supporters, as always. First off, we did have another new bailiff this week, which is actually the Next Session podcast, particularly Alyssa from the Next Session podcast, who's been a big fan of ours. I also love that show. I was a guest on that show at one point, and I also just was listening anyways because, well... Again, it's a D&D thing, so it's a pretty select audience of who would enjoy it, but it's very enjoyable between the two of them. They're very funny, and they make it very entertaining, so.
Yeah, and Alyssa's a long-term friend of mine from Seattle, so love you guys, Adam and Alyssa. Yeah. You guys are the bomb.com. Yeah.
And then also, I'd like to give thanks to our ever-present Judge Troy. Judge Troy. thank you again so much. We seriously appreciate your feedback. And again, would love to hear a potential idea for an episode in the future if you think of one.
Hell yeah.
And of course, our amazing list of freaking dope bailiffs. We've got Jake. Jake, what is up? Nate. Nate, what is up? Up. Anthony. Anthony, what is up? Jason. Jason, what is up? Like, Michael.
You're committed.
Michael, what is up? Tim. Tim, what is up? Preston. Preston, what is up? Y'all. So that's my we love you, thank you equivalent for Lisa, basically, of saying going through bailiffs. So
thank you, we love you.
Thank you guys, all of you, for supporting us on Patreon. We do need to get some content out to you soon, and we know that. But
and we will.
We will. It's just it's the shortest month of the year, and basically a week and a half of it was completely decimated by Lisa's by Texas's entire existence. So
yeah. But, so bear with me, guys.
Yeah. So we also like to do things regarding the show on this show.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess if you want to.
I mean, it's debatable. So I had something I brought forward. I guess I'm going to talk about my thing first because that's the order in which it's presented on the script. So we had a thing we did not too long ago with one of these things, and I'd like to do it again because someone did specifically say, hey, I really like it when you guys do this.
Okay.
And so I have decided, once again, it's quiz time for Lisa Pants.
Boop, 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 boop.
And I will say, it is considerably more difficult than the first one.
Okay.
Not like
I'm
impossible,
into it.
But like it's one where you're going to miss some questions. And so people out in the fanhood that are listening, if they'll probably feel really dope when they answer the question without multiple choice. I will ask the question first. They didn't list multiple choice, but I'll make it up on the spot. So,
okay. Oh, on the fly. Let's see how this goes.
So,
okay.
Question number one.
Okay.
The TV show Power Rangers
was
banned in what country until 2011?
I'm going to say this sounds like something that Germany would say. No, thank you.
So that's your final answer?
Sure.
Okay. It's New Zealand. Like that's
why New Zealand?
I honestly was thinking you were going to ask for multiple choice on that one because just saying a random country is insane. Like, if you just nailed it on the first one.
Here's the thing. I shoot from the hips. I love just being like, sure, that's my final answer. I would make it through two rounds of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. They'd be like, wow, like, you really blew it. You had all these options to call people. It's like, no.
It's like, man, like Germany. I just never had $0 before. I can't believe you didn't even make it to 1,000.
That's true.
So here's a question. Question. Okay. What fashion accessory was invented by a high school shop teacher?
A fashion accessory. Can I ask, is it more for male or female?
I would say it's gender neutral.
Damn it. Okay.
Which, I mean, that's still pretty revealing that I would say men and women both use it.
I was going to say, because butterfly clips were definitely not one I saw a bunch of dudes wearing. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say fanny packs.
Okay.
The final answer.
Okay. The answer is slap bracelets.
Okay. That's pretty dope, though.
Yeah, I know.
That's pretty dope.
I know. Like, it's because it's one of those things where I'm guessing they just had a weird piece of plastic and then just like they were just using it for some project. And he's just like, hey, these are fun. Like, they go around your wrist.
Or you're just like a kid with one of those old measuring tapes, like the metal ones that just like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can slap
those ones
too.
Yeah, it hurts a lot.
That's actually,
but yeah,
your
you
theory makes way more sense, actually. So,
okay.
Question three. Macaulay Culkin was paid $1 million, the most a child had ever made to star in a film. What was the film?
This is either Home Alone or Richie Rich. I'm going to say, was it? I want to say it was Richie Rich because I feel like we talked about it when we covered it. I'm going to say Richie Rich.
Okay.
I'm wrong. I know it.
Yeah, you are. The answer is My Girl.
What? He got paid $1 million for My Girl?
Million. Yep.
Which is funny because like I love that movie and I've been dying to cover it.
That's a Stephen King one, right?
I don't know if it was Stephen King. It was just a sad movie. I just thought Stephen King did sad.
Who wrote?
Hey Siri, who directed My Girl?
Not directed. Who wrote it? My Girl. Who wrote My Girl?
Right. Shit. We're doing this on
the movie, not Larice, the song.
Larice Elihue.
Son of a fuck. Why did I think, why?
I love the idea that Stephen King was somehow involved, though.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from as far as me thinking that, but apparently that was the thought I had. So
apparently.
Hey. Anyways.
Hey.
It seemed like a weird call. Like, I was even thinking, like, that didn't make sense. But anyways, moving on. The next question. Question four.
Four.
The Dream Team won Olympic gold in what year's games? For so many people, they're just, like, screaming this one. Because this one's at least pretty easy, comparatively.
Pretty easy, everybody?
I'm saying comparatively because you could make an educated guess.
So we have a 2000, 96, 92. I want to say 96. I'm wrong. 96.
Okay. The answer is 92.
Son of a bitch! Damn it.
I'm so sorry. I just
it's
like
okay. I was
close. I it sucks so bad. You had a 50-50 chance of that one. You still beefed it.
It's okay. I love that beefed it is a verb. I beefed it. Yeah.
So here's this one. So I'm gonna you really should ask for multiple choice this one because it'd be way easier. So
okay.
How many Americans tuned in to watch the OJ Simpson trial verdict?
All of them. Every
let me see. The answer is all of them. Wow. That's an amazing
Okay,
figure.
I'll take multiple choice.
Okay. Is it 75 million, 95 million, 110 million, or 80 million?
95 million.
Booyah. Fucking crushed it.
I got one.
Fadeaway jumper from midcourt.
That's right.
The problem with doing that is that I'm like, the way that the mind works, especially with numbers, is it always tends to be the second highest one, which I ended up doing in spite of myself.
Oh, yeah. That's tough.
I almost always guess the second highest whenever they give you four numbers.
I always defaulted to C just because.
Sure. So what was the first animated feature film to be nominated for a Best Picture Oscar?
Animated feature? I'll take multiple choice.
Okay. Is it The Little Mermaid? I'm trying to think of like some other options here. Let me see. Is it The Little Mermaid? Is it Aladdin? Beauty and the Beast, or Mulan?
You said Best Picture?
Yeah.
Beauty and the Beast.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Bada bing, bada boom, baby.
Oh, I realized I was like, I've given it away pretty strongly that it's probably not The Little Mermaid.
Number two.
Okay, question. This one is actually surprising, which is, also gives you a hint. What was the best-selling video game console of the 1990s?
I want to say the N64, but well... It's either N64 or the Super Nintendo. And I'm or is it the Game Boy? Does the Game Boy count?
That would count as a console as well, yeah.
Okay, but the way you said it.
The way I said it,
it
just kind of giveaway, huh? Yeah, I probably shouldn't have said that.
I feel like I saw more people with N64s. Nintendo 64.
Okay. The answer is the Sony PlayStation.
Oh, well,
I was
stunned
by that, but I guess it's just like it was so ever-present for so long.
It really was.
People were using it for a long time, even after like it wasn't even the best system anymore.
Yeah.
Question. Who is the only rap star? That's not right. Why did I say it? Who is the only star to appear in all 215 episodes of Family Matters?
Urkel? Urkel had to have been it, right? No, Family Matters is what you said, right?
Yep.
Okay, Urkel.
The answer is Reginald Ville Johnson.
Who?
Uncle Phil. Urkel wasn't in like the first two episodes, I believe, because he was supposed to be a partial episode. Because we talked about that when I talked about Urkel, that he was not supposed to be a main character, and then he got introduced later. And
son of a bitch! I should have figured that.
Now I know why I said rap, because I was looking at the next question. Okay, so final question.
All right.
What was the first rap song to hit number one on the Billboard's Hot 100 ever?
Ever? Mm-hmm. Whoa.
Number one, though, thinking about that.
Okay, I will take multiple choice on this one.
Okay. God damn it, Lisa.
I know. Oh,
I
no.
can't think
okay.
of like any other rap songs. Let's see. Regulators.
Okay.
Ice Ice Baby. Gangster's
Gross.
Paradise.
Ooh.
And that's it. Those are the three.
Gangster's Paradise.
It's Ice Ice Baby.
Son of a bitch. What?
Yeah. I know
Gross.
It hurts your heart, but it doesn't stop it from being the correct
answer. Wait,
that
was the first one? By Vanilla Ice?
Yeah, that's what really hurts my heart about that is that fucking Vanilla Ice earned that title.
I was going to guess like California Love because that shit was dope. That was pretty late in the game. Vanilla Ice? Gross. America.
Anyways, so that's the quiz. Lisa did pretty good, I would say. Kind of in the middle there. She caught some good ones, but...
What, I get three? Two?
I think you got three. Let me see. Mm. You got... Let me see. The 95 million... Disputing the Beast. No, you got two. I'm sorry.
A cool 20%. That's fine.
Oh,
I'm cool with losing.
I forgot. I scrolled down. Well, one last question.
What
actor starred in two of the top 10 highest grossing films in the 1990s?
Jim Carrey.
Highest grossing ever?
Oh, ever. DiCaprio.
No, not ever. Of the 1990s.
DiCaprio.
It is Will Smith.
Scott.
Independence Day and Men in Black.
All right. I
said that because I was like, comedies don't really make as much. That's why I mentioned of all movies. So
yeah, that was a good. I was just like, wait, Titanic. But then I realized, damn it, Will Smith, really?
Yep.
Well,
old Willie.
Getting jiggy with it.
Let's get back to, let's go to Lisa and see what she has to say after me just reading a bunch
of
questions.
Cutting to Lisa now. Well, guess what, everyone? Aren't you lucky?
We're going to cut to Lisa. Live in the scene.
Today I'm talking about another thing I personally had zero experience with because I was a female at the time.
Good.
And am today. But today I'm talking about something that every kid who was a fan of like Tiger Beat or Bop Magazine felt in their souls when they were staring at pictures of their beloved JTT, Jonathan Taylor Thomas,
uh-huh.
or Devin Sawa. And that, my friend, is the iconic just middle part boy haircut. And I'm talking straight down the center,
middle part.
floppy kind of like curtains of the face. Like I can't think of like any guy friends, relatives, ex-boyfriends, anybody that at some point in their lives didn't have, like in the decade, had that like totally down the middle with like kind of hanging bangs down the side. Like if you were a boy, you just had it. You just did it. Your hair, if you went into a barbershop and you asked for a high and tight, boom, came out with a Nick Carter from Backstreet Boys. How in the hell?
Can I tell you something? That haircut is like impossible to maintain.
I can imagine. Because it's already it's already kind of long for the most part, unless you do like the really kind of shorter one, which kind of, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's kind of on the long side. And then it just gets long, long, long really fast. And then it ends up hitting your shoulders, but maybe not evenly and kind of not very attractively unless it takes a lot of maintenance. And it was on everyone. Like, let's review who all the fuck had this hair.
I'm looking on like just photos and I'm like, holy shit, I had no idea that many people had it.
Sean from Boy Meets World. Mm-hmm. And basically every actor in Boy Meets World, except for Corey. Even Topanga. Well, it's not Topanga.
The iconic Topanga.
Obviously, JTT, like I said. Mm-hmm. Even Leonardo DiCaprio had it.
Yeah, Leo's. I'm seeing Leo all over the place here.
Yeah, he didn't always do it. His was kind of like off-center, but the dead center, like on the early stages. If you were like 15, like 14 to 20, that was like, it was your shit. It was your shit. Jared Leto, when he was Jordan Catalano in My So-Called Life, right down the center, baby. And then, like, the two older handsome brothers, the younger one knew how to rock it slightly to the side and not look like such a jerk. But the older two were, like, primo jerk status. So, but, like, for the time, looking back, it wasn't a bad look then. Like, it's kind of, like, playful and cute and flirty. And you're like, oh, you're so dreamy. But then, like, every dude had it. And you're just like,
Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, is that different than the bowl cut? Because I remember that a lot.
The bowl cut is
No, it's more. Here's the thing. I'm looking at bowl cuts right now.
Mm-hmm.
Way worse hairstyle.
So bad. So deeply bad.
I don't know. Like, here's the thing. I know for a fact I had that at some point, and it just drives me wild to think, like, I want my head to look kind of like the end of a penis.
Just a little bit. Just
the tip, maybe a little mushroom on top of there. Just whatever.
Just make me look extra make funnable, please.
Yeah. Like, I want to look like I'm wearing a yarmulke 100% of the time.
But instead, I'm just in class hating my life. Thanks, Mom. I love
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Mom. We love you.
But, like, I guess in hindsight, like, the whole weird-ass bangs curtain thing for your face for guys wasn't so bad. It was just, like, just wasn't it, bros. And, like, of course, as all things mm-hmm. do, history is, of course, repeating itself. And so the middle part, at least for women right now, is a huge controversy because they're like, hey, Gen X? I'm a millennial, whatever. Millennial. What are we, Gen Z? What are we? No,
we're millennials. We're X.
Whatever we are.
We're millennials.
X. Yeah, we're millennials. Everyone's like, millennials with your side parts. It's like, first of all, you can go straight to hell. And they're like, in your skinny jeans. I was like, y'all bitches are talking like people who have not worn like JNCO jeans in a rainy day.
The very early end of the millennials. Like, I think it's like once you get back into like 81, 82 or something like that, it's Gen Z or Gen X, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So whatever the case is, they're like middle parts. It's like, have you seen what middle parts did to us in the past? It's like, do not wish mm-hmm. that upon us again, although it's going to happen anyway. But like, I just need to personally know, Andy, right off the bat, live right here on the show, how many years of your school pictures feature you with that straight, cool middle part?
Here's the thing. I think maybe like two. Like, I honestly don't think I had it very long because I was kind of just... I would always do a spike, which was like, in retrospect, I'm like, what was a spike? So it was literally just them putting a lot of hair gel in your hair and then spiking it up real high. Mm-hmm. And it looked so dumb. And I realized, like, in retrospect, I don't think that's how I wore my hair very shortly afterwards. Because eventually, I would normally do a side part as a child, which realizing now,
that's
like,
a good look, though.
That's what
Classic.
I default to when my hair gets too long. Like, right now, it is what I'm doing right now because of the fact that my hair, I haven't gotten a haircut in like 3 months, so
yeah,
I'm just kind of rocking that. So,
but it works. Did you ever do like Static X style high spikes?
I don't believe so. No, it was just literally like basically like gelled up hair, just straight up, like all over the place. They cut really short, but then the middle hairs on top would stand up really tall.
That was one of the ones that I saw for haircuts from the 90s as well. It's like that one was more like generally acceptable, but the down middle, like, you had to have a very specific thing go, but like, it would just happen to everyone regardless of whether or not they could pull it off. All the dudes just had the middle part and you're like, this is my life now, everyone has middle parts.
Yeah. I don't know if it was you or somebody else, but somebody posted on Facebook like hey, like, to you Gen Zers who are making fun of like millennials that have their hair side parted. Like, yeah, we're still recovering from the middle parts of the 90s or whatever. So I actually saw something about that not that long ago about that, somebody making jokes about the JTT middle cut.
Yeah, you guys can fuck off. We've lived through, like, multiple recessions at this point. Like, we can part mm-hmm. our hair however the fuck we want to. You're just not entering the workforce. Sit down. Shut up. But also listen to the show, please.
Oh, God. I mean, listen, if there's anybody, I got nothing for anybody, like, 18 or under.
No,
like,
I don't either. They're gonna be like, oh, she probably uses emojis. It's like, you're right, I do. It feels great. They're
Wait,
fantastic.
Hold on. Is there a problem with using emojis?
Yeah, they're like, oh, you're so, like, you're showing your age using like the LOL emojis. Like, you can suck my asshole. Like,
what?
You can bugger right off with your, I bet you're on Snapchat. I don't That's even know what they're using anymore.
Yeah, I'll be honest. This is going to be the oldest sounding shit ever to anyone who is like even like remotely close to that. Because even like people are like 25 or like, I at least understand like both worlds in this situation.
Right.
But like, man, like. Yeah, like, the way that they use social media and everything like that is, like, totally different than us and stuff. And mm-hmm. it amazes me that in such a short time, with us using the same technology, somehow they still are in such a situation that we look at them and say, when I was your age, we did. You know, like...
Oh, yeah.
The fucking
Absolutely.
old man things that we say to people that adults always said to us when we were kids.
It's true, and this is it, episode 73, us just watching it, all of our youth
just slip away,
leave through our fingertips,
dissipate,
just gone.
Into darkness.
Don't worry, we still have MySpace memories. You wish you were around for MySpace.
I don't know if you do, really, if I'm being honest.
Man, top 8 friends, you know how good it felt to be, like, demoted? New best friend.
Right. Yeah, I felt really good about
Petty.
how few people I was on their top 8 friends, so.
Damn it. See, now we're breaking each other's hearts. We should stop.
Anyway, so now that you've enjoyed this episode of Depressing 90s Court.
Depression Court. Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. You'll get to hear all of the fantastic ads, including the Sleep Phone ad. You love it. You love it.
Sleep Phones, I love you. You are so good, and I use you all the time.
Every single night. Even if no one else is in the room, it's just, it's like, I'm used to it now.
Sure.
I love it.
But I have to charge them a little more than I'd like to. Like, but it is worth it, and I do it every single day, like, just so I know I can get a full night's sleep with those.
See, and I do the corded one. I'm willing to strangle myself at night to get a good night's sleep.
This is willing to die for this.
I just want to sleep. No matter how it comes. So, yeah. All right, we'll be back after the break with our poll results from 2 weeks ago and this week's court.
All right, bye. Bye.
Hey, 90s Court listeners, Lisa here. I'm here to talk to you really quickly about a product that I absolutely love and I've used every single day for years and years and years. Let me hit you with a couple of scenarios. Perhaps you're miserable because your partner snores like crazy, or maybe you're a night shift worker who can't get proper sleep during the day, or maybe you live in a really loud and busy downtown area. There's hope for you, and it comes in the form of Sleep Phones from Acoustic Sheep. I'm not lying when I say I've been using them religiously for years, and they're the sole reason I'm not a crazy person suffering from insomnia. Sleep Phones are just ultra-soft headphones and a headband that are extremely bed-friendly. Side sleepers can also rejoice, for you can comfortably block out the sounds of the world while getting some soothing, noise-free sleep without hurting your ears. They even have wireless Bluetooth options, so you don't get tangled up in cords overnight. I personally connect mine to my phone each night and listen to some white noise to drown out my partner's snores. I'm telling you, I've gifted them to night shift nurses, in-laws, basically anybody with ears that values a good night's sleep. They even have options now that come preloaded with binaural beats or deeply relaxing ASMR content. So you can find something that's just right for you and maybe not even have to connect to your phone at all if you don't want to. Andy and I both use these now, and we'd love to help you get some rest too. Go to sleepphones.com and use the code 90scourt to get $10 off your order of $39 or more. That's sleepphones.com, and the code is 90SCOURT. Sweet dreams.
Welcome back, everybody, from the break. I said that very loudly, and I regret it, but here we are. I'm Andy.
Hello.
Lisa and I were just talking about making fun of somebody on her NPR station that says, hello.
Hello.
I say goodbye, and you say hello.
Hello.
Hello. Anyways.
We're ruining our listeners' brains. We're sorry.
We're all ruined and destroyed. We're all just at least on Thursdays, usually. That's so a little peek behind the curtain, everybody. It's Thursday right now, and you're probably listening to this Monday or next week sometime.
That's true. Well, because my weekend away that got canceled got rescheduled because we are desperate to get out of here after that.
Yeah. So. The well-deserved GTFO. So hey, we got some poll results from last week. Breaking news. Not super breaking news, because, like, you know, we had a feeling how it would go, you had a feeling how it go, and that's what happened. So
yep, that's exactly what happened.
Last week we covered Alanis Morissette and Fiona Apple, both amazing rock star badasses from the 90s. And on Twitter, poll results came out 66% to 34% Alanis. So honestly, not too bad. You know, it's just a little over 2/3, so that's pretty solid. Or a little over 1/3 percentage of the votes. So that's pretty good. Facebook, it's getting a little worse. 73% to 27% Alanis. So not so great in that regard. And I didn't mean to do this, but somehow it ended up being in the exact order of best to worst. Instagram, 78% to 22%. Yikes.
Sure. Yikes is
on
right.
Bikes.
That's a yikes for me.
That's a yikes for me, yeah. Dog.
That's okay, because even though it's just like, I know Alanis is going to win, but Fiona Apple's so rad. But then even in my case, I was like, nah, I think Alanis is better, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool to at least, like, acknowledge them and stuff like that, like, because Fiona Apple had some amazing stuff, and I'm just, I'm glad to see that at least a decent amount. Like I said, I'm sure there are going to be hardcore people who are either super against Alanis Morissette or super for Fiona Apple, so I was glad to see them come out and vote. So anyways, we're not going to be talking about that this week. Instead, this week, we're going to be bringing you a court case that is, dipped in absolute stupidity. Ba-dum-bum-ba-dum. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We I think we ended up covering a Jim Carrey film a while back, Cable Guy, I think, against Robin Williams' film, Mrs. Doubtfire. So we decided, though, we were putting off. We're like, there's so many movies we need to cover, especially comedies and stuff. So we just decided, let's just hit you with the double Jim Carrey. And so this week we are bringing you Ace Ventura, Pet Detective versus The Mask.
The Mask.
And Lisa has graciously agreed to go first because that's just how our show works. Mm-hmm. Because we alternate every episode. And she will be covering The Mask.
For sure. So first of all, The Mask is considered a superhero comedy film?
I guess. That's fair.
If those are words you actually want to say.
Like,
for sure.
As opposed, like, I just... Anyways, I just want to see a list of all of the superhero comedy films.
Yeah, this ain't the one. This monstrosity was released on July 29th, 1994. It had a budget of $18 to $23 million. I don't know where the ambiguity is there, but okay.
It's like, I mean, and there's maybe $5 million extra in there. Who knows?
Can you imagine just being like, I don't know where $5 million
Wait,
are.
Like, I'm missing $5 million. I don't remember if I spent it on this show or something else, though.
It's like, LOL. Who knows? Guess what? Little spoiler alert. It wasn't on Jim Carrey.
Nope.
We'll talk about that later. So this had that budget of $18 to $23 million and it brought in a cool, I don't know, $351.6 million at the box office. So that's all right. It's all right. The cast is pretty good in that it includes Jim Carrey as Stanley Ipkiss. Cameron Diaz plays Tina. Peter Green, who you may not know the name, but you recognize his face, played Dorian Tyrell. And there was a dog. And there were some other people. And then there's a little bit of Ben Stein,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie opened. This I'd forgotten about this particular scene, but as soon as I start talking about it, you might be like, oh. So they open on Edge City, where two divers have just discovered a treasure chest and are working to open it when a large pipe that's being lifted above, like, breaks loose and slams into the diver.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that? You're like, oh, that's so weird.
It's like, oh, that's a weird setup. Savage shit right
Why
off the bat.
Why did someone have to die?
Yeah.
Yeah, right off the bat. And then the pipe bumps into the treasure chest, opening it up and releasing Boop. This gross mask, and it just floats up to the top. So,
and that's I love adjectives that you use to describe things that are complete non sequiturs, but I like mm-hmm. it.
Yep, it is a gross mask, and this is a monstrosity of a movie.
Mm.
Tell me where the lie is, Andy. Tell me.
No lie.
So shortly after, we meet Stanley Ipkiss, Jim Carrey's character, who works at a bank when the rain starts coming down and in comes the extremely sultry Miss Tina, of course, played by Cameron Diaz, who is in this like ridiculous red dress with that kind of like cuts at the leg, kind of like Who Framed Roger Rabbit style.
Uh-huh.
And like wet hair. And it's just like, holy shit. And so she wants to open an account. So she starts talking to Stanley and is being hella flirty and kind of cutesy bootsy, but you notice that her purse has a little camera on it and she rotates it so that it can take a look at the open vault. I guess banks just have the vault open sometimes.
Yeah, they just have it wide open. They're just like, well, hopefully nobody decides to rob us now.
Because we're totally not vulnerable at the moment. This is fine. We were raising a barn.
I mean, I guess if people are like coming to like take money out or bring money in, like with the big armored vehicle, I guess it'd be open for a little bit, but yeah.
But just regular business hours, it seems kind of
just
iffy,
chilling.
But whatever. So she's spying on the bank with her purse and trying to get visuals on the vault. And it turns out that she works for this gangster named Dorian, played by Peter Green. And he's also the owner of the nightclub Coco Bongo.
Yes.
So his whole shtick is that he's trying to stick it to his boss, Nico, played by, check this name out. Are you ready? Orestes Maracena.
I'm sorry, that's the actor's name?
Yeah, Orestes Maracena.
Okay, good, because if that was the character's name, I'd be like, you made a real misstep, I think.
No, it was Nico, and I didn't learn the character's last name. So he sends Tina. So Dorian is Tina's boyfriend, and he sends Tina into the bank to record the layout and kind of, you know, she can get away with a lot because she is Cameron Diaz.
I do like the fact that she like walked in there. She's like, we got to really scope this thing out and figure out a good point of entry to get into that safe. She's like, oh, it's just open. So she's like, never
imagine?
Mind, guys.
Wow.
We can just, it's really easy.
It's so easy. Like, this bank is too easy. So she also is a performer at Coco Bongo, and Stanley tries to go watch her perform, but does not make it in. Earlier in the movie, his Civic was busted. And at the car repair shop, they were like, well, your car won't be ready, but we'll give you a loaner. And it's this like absolute beater, total. If you remember, it's like popping and coughing and banging, and it's awful, smoking. And so he takes that to Coco Bongo, which meant he for real wasn't getting in that night to see Tina perform. So depressed that he doesn't get in, he stops at a bridge and looks over and sees that mask floating in the harbor, thinking it's someone. So he goes in and gets it.
Now, oh, that's right. I was going to say, cause otherwise it would be absurd to be like, hey, look, a mask.
I need that mask.
I need that.
Whoa, did that come from Cardin Party Factory? I need it back immediately, please.
It's like Spirit Halloween's not even, it doesn't exist yet. I need to get this mask.
Do you not think Spirit existed in 94?
I actually don't know the answer to that. I'm sorry.
Boy, we're going to have to take that offline, my friend. Take that offline. So
I'll look it up while you're talking.
For sure. So he dives in thinking he's going to save someone, but instead it's just this cool mask. So he heads home to his shitty apartment with the shitty apartment manager and tries putting on the mask. And at that point, it like latches onto his face and turns him into this awful cartoon monster that is basically everything that he's not. Courageous, confident, a smooth talker, disgusting, has green skin, has a zoot suit. It's kind of, like, I would not say that it was an overall win-win, but while wearing the mask, not only is he a different person, but he's also got like all these cartoon affects, and that he can just pull mallets out of his pockets, bend himself, fall from huge buildings and be totally fine and go splat. So at this point, he's trying to sneak out of the apartment in the mask, and his apartment manager sees this green dude in the hallway, and she's like, what the fuck? And he just starts, and like, he starts screaming in her face, and she just behind the door pulls out a shotgun and starts like, ksh, psh, ksh, psh. And I'm like, cool, disregard for all your tenants. Like, you're the best apartment manager there ever was.
Just fucking like spray firing. Hopefully it doesn't kill any tenants in the next room or anything like that. Just
for sure. But it like definitely did. So, so he's out of the building now, and he's about to get jumped shortly after this. And he, this scene is not notable for any other reason that he's like pulling cartoonish balloon animals out of his pocket and like, you know, doing a show for the people who are about to jump him to distract them. And then, if in one scene he pulls out a used condom from his pocket.
Uh-huh.
And I was like,
I'm sorry. Okay, Lisa, I gotta ask you this. Is there a way that we know it was a used condom?
It was unrolled.
Okay, sure.
So
I'll continue.
Yeah, we'll stop the conversation there, but it's unrolled and it's unrolled. So it's long. So it's a thing.
Yeah.
So
no, keep adding additional details. I appreciate
it. I'm going to stop talking. so dead talking. So a cutesy redheaded reporter who works at the local station, who's trying to make her way up in the biz, comes to try and interview Stanley to see if he knows anything about the chaos that unfolded the night before. Because if you recall, while wearing the mask, the mask like went to the car repair shop and like stuck mufflers up the dude's assholes. Do you remember that scene? Weirdly aggressive.
I don't remember that, but I mean, I can't remember it specifically in my mind, but like that checks out for sure.
It checks out. So she's like, well, you're a customer there. And like, but he's not fazed at all because she's got so much interest in him. And like, and she's like, but you're so sweet. And like, I remember that you wrote into the newspaper, and he's like, yeah. But I just want to get some money to go see Tina dance. Like, I'm still totally in love with Cameron Diaz. I'm like, I get it. She was a total hachi-machi in the 90s. I get it. And still is, to be honest. So he's trying to figure out how to get money to go see her again. So that night he puts on the mask and then ends up robbing his own bank, I believe.
Sure. And he's like, well, the door's open. I don't have to do much.
The vault is always open. The code is 0000.
It's like a Motel 6 commercial. It's like,
yeah.
And we'll leave the vault open for you.
Exactly. And so this somehow foils a plan for the gangster Dorian to overtake his boss, Nico. Okay. So Stanley, realizing that Tina would never like him for his boring old self, instead is like, you know what? She's going to love me as a gross-ass, horny, green banana suit-wearing monster person. So he puts on the mask and goes to Coco Bongo and engages in this absurd dance with her. And she's supposed to be turned on? Question mark? Do you remember this crazy scene of them dancing?
Yeah, no, I remember the... Like this, like... Congo lines and shit like that, and just like him doing maracas and like dressed in, you know, Spanish garb and everything like that. It was weird, and yes, it does occur to me very much how strange it is that they're just like, let's just ignore the fact that we're having this woman, this very attractive woman, be attracted to a clearly diseased human being.
He's got gangrene, but like his skin is, mm-hmm. his flesh is gone. Like, this isn't right. And his teeth triple in size when he's wearing the mask. So that's not very cool either. So at this point, I'm going to be honest, the movie just gets kind of boring, because like, to me, the mob storyline was not that interesting. And this movie was like an hour and 40 minutes long. I was like, are you serious right now? This is way too long. I don't know. So I'm skipping a lot of stuff, but this includes Dorian, the mob guy, getting a hold of the mask and putting it on, and he buffs up and is like super evil and gross. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Of course.
Yeah. And then he gets like, at one point he gets shot like crazy, but then absorbs all the bullets and then inhales them and shoots them out of his mouth. Machine
gun. Yeah.
And I was like, that's so fucked up. So anyway, at the end of it, it all gets worked out. Stanley is not charged with any of the crimes he did while he was wearing the mask. And instead of the weird like side story where you think perhaps Stanley might get with that reporter that knows he's a nice guy and seems to dig him, nope, he just ends up with Tina, and that's okay.
Wow. Don't like that ending very much, actually.
It's weird. And I skipped over a lot of scenes that were just kind of like weird filler. Like the scene where the mask is confronted and surrounded by cops, and he starts singing Cuban Pete and makes all the officers do a conga line.
That was in that scene. I was describing all those things when he was at the club.
But you know what? It was all one and the same.
Yeah.
All one and the same. And like, or the time where the mask seduced Tina in the park, and they're like northern lights over this giant city. And also he's just the worst, grossest dude. And then also all the scenes where everybody could have just killed Stanley the second they wanted to while he's wearing the mask, like in a heartbeat, but they just don't. And it's annoying, because a part of me was like, oh my God, take this dude out right now, please.
Just like, just he was fucking deeply, end it.
Just end this for me. So I know we're all here for trivia, because this is probably some of the most interesting stuff for a movie. The oversized teeth that Jim Carrey wore while wearing the mask were originally supposed to only be used during silent portions of the film, but he learned to talk with them on, so they were like,
what?
Okay, yeah, he's good at that, I guess. And so
I get it. I'm sorry, I was kind of trying to understand. So basically he just was supposed to wear those because that's him, but when he was talking they were going to do it without it, because that way he could actually talk.
But he learned how to talk with them. I think he did the directors a lot of favors here, because especially in this next one, the director was able to save a ton of money on special effects, because Jim Carrey was able to move his body in very weird, rubbery ways.
Mm-hmm.
The role for Tina that Cameron Diaz took was originally meant for Anna Nicole Smith. However, they saw Cameron Diaz leaving a modeling agency, and they were like, oops, never mind.
And imagine at the end him getting with Anna Nicole Smith. Like, that would just, like, I don't know. I just think... Like I said, that whole thing gave me a bad taste in my mouth. Like, why would you be... Like, the story doesn't even make sense to have him be good with the...
It was just like, we
reward
good.
People being creepy and following women that gave them the least bit of attention.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, like, the attention for all the wrong reasons,
exactly.
Right? Exactly. And so, as a result, this was actually Cameron Diaz's first acting role.
Excuse me?
Yeah. But didn't she, like watching it, I was like, she actually did a good job. She was a good actress in this. And she was, not to mention this, she was fucking gorgeous, but yeah. Applying the mask to Jim Carrey took 4 hours each time. Jim Carrey, well, go ahead.
I was just curious, like, when they say applying the mask, they mean doing the whole green get up.
Yes.
Okay. Because I guess, like, otherwise if it was just the mask sitting on his face, I'm like, that seems pretty easy. Just kind of put it up against it.
It's just, I don't know if they could have made him look grosser. It's deeply unpleasant to look at him.
It is amazing to think, though, that this took the same amount of time every time as Mrs. Doubtfire did, because Mrs. Doubtfire seemed way more complicated.
Right. This was just gross. I feel like they should have just done themselves a favor and been like, we're just not going to make this movie, but they did anyway, so here we are.
I thought you were going to say some like alternate like thing that they could do in the film, but instead you
just drop
totally
it.
Plot twisted me there. That was great.
Shyamalan right here, baby. Carrey was only paid $450,000 for his role in this movie. His contract for this movie was signed before Ace Ventura became a big hit. Uh-huh. Therefore, Carrey lost out pretty hard. And according to the director, Carrey would not go home until he did his Elvis impression. I don't know if that's every day or if that was just like at the end of filming that he was just like, no, I'm not going home until I get to do Elvis. But that's odd. And if you recall, finally, the success of this movie later launched a cartoon show also called The Mask. I vaguely remember this mistake.
Uh-huh.
But it, like, I can see it in my head. I'm like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it anymore. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is The Mask.
Wow.
And I've been fully prepared to get completely annihilated by Ace Ventura because I should be.
I don't know. I mean, like, you say that now. But just
you
wait.
Say that now. We'll see.
Man, I was just looking because I wanted to see how much he made on Ace Ventura. So apparently he made $350,000 for Ace Ventura. Now, that being said, he would do Dumb and Dumber later that year. Like, Lisa and I have talked about this, is that 1994 was an absolute world beater year. Like, we were like, screw other people's tax returns. We want to see Jim Carrey's tax returns for 1994 because it was so much money. Like, he did 4 movies in 1 year. It was just fucking wild. So
I haven't even said 4 sentences today.
Yeah.
Movies in a year.
Just 4 movies in a year. That's insane. So, and what, do you know when that movie came out, by the way, The Mask?
Yeah. I want to say June or July. Okay. July 29th, 94.
Gotcha. Yeah. Mine came out in February. February 4th, to be exact, 1994, comedy film starring Jim Carrey as Ace Ventura with co-stars Courtney Cox, Tone Loke, Sean Young, and of course, Dan Marino.
Oh, Dan Marino.
The top billed
actor
of this film.
Yes.
So, this movie's about 86 minutes, so it's a pretty short one. Again, like I know like comedies are a little bit shorter, but I think they made a good decision making this. Like, it felt like yours could have been shorter and mine could have been a little bit longer. Like, just fill a little bit of gaps. Because I actually had to rent this one, so I like got my money's worth because I watched it once, and then I was kind of like, I don't know if I really gathered anything about what just happened in that movie. And I watched it again. I was like, oh no, I was right the first time. It's just very short.
It's just very short.
So the budget was $15 million. Apparently, like very little of that went to Jim Carrey. And box office, $107.2 million.
So that did not as well as I thought it did.
107? That's pretty good.
Well, I mean, mine did 356.
$356 million?
Is that what I said? Let me see. I've got it written at $351 million.
Still, okay. I guess it's because they saw Ace Ventura and were like, fuck yeah, more of that.
But see, that to me is surprising that Ace Ventura, because Ace Ventura is a really good, like, well-loved movie. I don't understand how it didn't do that well in the box office.
I mean, it was his first big film. I mean, he'd been on like some other shows and stuff, but this was kind of his first big gig, so...
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Hence the low pay. So let's go over the summary of the show. This is going to shock you, but Ace Ventura, he's a pet detective working out of Miami, Florida, and evidently is well known enough as a pet detective that like actual professional adults know who he is by word of mouth.
Of course.
So movie starts out showing Jim Carrey basically because... It's good when a movie or a TV show where they show like, hey, we're going to show you once how this works, how he does his job, just to clarify that he does actually do a good job at this, even if it's insane, of him saving this dog that was kidnapped or something by some guy. And he, in a very unusual way, stole the dog and brought it back to the woman who owned it. And he got a big, big money out of that. He's not exactly crushing it money-wise, though. Evidently, like, there's not a lot of huge paydays in the pet detective game. And evidently, like, he has a friend in the Miami PD, and they kind of connect and talk about stuff. But apparently the Miami PD, like, just shits on him constantly, which makes sense.
Yeah, it seems reasonable.
Particularly Lois Einhorn, who's, like, the sergeant or something like that, who's played by Sean Young, which seems like it'd be a guy's name, but it's definitely not.
No. She had the tight red hair, right?
Yeah, yeah. And she dislikes him quite a bit. So basically, here's the thing is that so the Miami Dolphins mascot, which is an actual fucking dolphin, I don't know if that's true. Like, I have never explored that. Like, I don't know what they would do with a dolphin, like, in presenting it, like, at a game or something. Just like, look at this dolphin. It's in a bathtub. There you go. But he gets mammal napped. And and randomly, someone on the case, Courtney Cox, hears that Ace Ventura is super good at animal shit. And so she's like, I want that dude. And so she gets him. I will say, Ace Ventura, this role of his, he is so insanely fucking over the top. This is like my least favorite form of Jim Carrey. I apologize. I know a lot of people like this about him, but I just, geez, it's a lot, you know, it's a lot.
Yeah.
So it's just, he's just a bit too much. Like even in The Mask, at least his alter ego, like his actual ego, like his normal character is, you know, soft spoken. Ace Ventura is just all the time, nonstop, just weird jokes talking
with
his butt.
That's a good point. Well, I mean, but who didn't talk through their ass after this movie came out?
I will say, yeah, this movie, though, like it's funny because I was thinking, I was like, this is very akin to Robin Williams, like the way that he acted in this movie. It's very Robin Williams, like, I'm going to talk as fast as I can. Here's a joke, you know, so.
Yes.
And that's not to insult to Robin Williams. It's just it was interesting because I was like, I didn't realize he kind of like had a vibe like Robin Williams in a lot of films. So
now, you know,
so. They're investigating, and he's out at the place where the dolphin was kidnapped, and he finds this small stone, like an amber stone, that was clearly from a 1984 Dolphin Super Bowl ring. So, I guess, I mean, like, they're just like, yeah, this stone was only done on the 84 ring, apparently. So, he ends up getting some leads as a result of that. So, he's starting to go through the list of, like, all the players that were on this picture he had of the team from 1984. So, he believes it has to have been this rich dude who was from the team because he's a wealthy exotic animal collector. And he's like, this dude's definitely kidnapped the dolphin. So they go to this really big fancy party. This is where the "woo, do not go in there" line comes from after he like was trying to do some stealthy shit behind the scenes and ended up getting pulled into a tank with a shark. And somehow just like after being clearly pulled down by the shark repeatedly, came out just really wet with some tattered clothes and no bite marks somehow. So yeah.
Seems reasonable.
So, but then he eventually, as he's leaving, he does see the ring of the guy who owns it, and the ring is completely intact with no missing pieces. So he's like, fuck, well, it's not this guy. So then cue small montage of him running into like every single football player from that poster he had of the 1984 team. Including multiple situations of him looking down at people's hands while they're peeing in a urinal to see the ring on their hand. But naturally, some got the wrong idea. One of them was very offended and was like, what the fuck, dude? And the other one was like, hey, what's going on?
What up, bro?
It's always good jokes. Anyways, so Ace, out of nowhere in this scene, he's just like, I just can't figure it out. And he's talking to this woman. And then he turns his head completely around, looks at this poster for like a half a second and immediately identifies something in this poster that's like 15 feet away from him and is very small. He's like, who the fuck is that? And he goes up and points to this person that was on this poster of the Super Bowl team that was not on the roster apparently on the photo that he'd been looking at. And so he sees that there's this guy who is a kicker of the team named Ray Finkel who's on the poster. And so he all of a sudden is like, okay, I need to look into this. And he kind of learns about the background of the fact that he missed this final kick and he blames Dan Marino for it or something like that. I don't know. It's weird. So clearly this Ray Finkel's pissed, but it's like he's trying to find this Ray Finkel and try and, you know, talk to them. But it seems like that person's just kind of disappeared. Like he goes to their parents' house and they're like, no, we haven't seen Ray in forever. So yeah. Anyways, Dan Marino is doing a commercial, and he gets kidnapped during the commercial. Apparently, part of the commercial was that two, like, defensive players, like, pick him up and like yes. take him off stage. And it turns out that like apparently the kidnappers just like stole the costumes of the actors and then just kept running and then put him in a vehicle and they drove off.
That's a very hilarious scene. Yeah. Also, what's with all the crime in Miami?
I know. It's just, I don't know. I guess just a lot of very dolphin themed crime apparently. Yeah. So then Einhorn is told by Ace. Let me see. No, I'm sorry. So Ray Finkel, he realizes that Ace realizes that Ray Finkel kidnapped both the dolphin and Marino as an act of revenge because he'd heard from his parents of Ray Finkel that like he held like a huge grudge against Dan Marino and had like a bunch of like shit about wanting to murder him and stuff like that. So it was pretty clear cut. And so he goes into the police station and tells Einhorn about it, who was the woman that was like the sergeant. And then all of a sudden she's just immediately like, well, fuck. I've changed my mind entirely about you in 2 seconds. And then they start making out severely for no reason. Like, it was a really weird turn, like, where they just started, like, getting real freaky. And he's like, okay. And then, like, they get interrupted. And so, like, he leaves. So, at some point, Ace realizes that Lois, a person by the name of Lois Einhorn, was found dead as, like, went missing or something like that out on a trail somewhere. And there was some kind of newspaper article he'd found somewhere of that. And was like, holy shit. He's like, why is Lois Einhorn? Like, why is she? And he kind of has this scene where he's just like, Finkel and Einhorn. It's so clear what like the dots are drawing to, but he just can't figure it out. And then I guess like his dog, like, walks near like the picture of Ray Finkel and its hair like gets a little bit over the thing and then he's like, Finkel's Einhorn, and then he's like so excited about it and then he gets repulsed because he realizes that he just made out with that person. So of course everyone has a good raffle about that as he's, you know, like using a lot of cleaning his mouth out and everything like that because it's 1994. So right. Ace does in fact find Einhorn with a kidnapped on Dan Marino and a dolphin, like under a pier or something. It was a weird place. Like it's very akin to the striptease ending where they're all just in this cave or whatever. So it just felt like a weird. Yeah. So the Super Bowl's going on at that time, and they're just randomly like in this weird like water. Like they're on the water clearly, on this just like some wooden docks or whatever. So the police show up because Einhorn calls them and because she kind of has the upper hand in the situation and is like got a gun to them. And then the police come to confront them and she's saying, shoot him. He's the one who did it. And they're like, no, we're not going to just kill this dude. What are you talking about? And so then he's trying to explain. He's doing his big like parlor room scene explaining how Einhorn is actually Ray Finkel and is like, well, if she was actually a woman, would she have this? And he like rips her pants off and it's just like she's just wearing like a normal underwear or whatever and it's like looks normal. And he's like, okay, well, certainly if she was really a woman, you wouldn't be able to explain the absence of these. And then rips her shirt open and she just has like a normal boobs with a bra on and everything.
Bra, yeah.
And so he's like, well, fuck. And then all of a sudden, Dan Marino, like, kind of says, hey, Ace. And then Ace comes over to Dan, who's still tied up for some reason. The police have not addressed that. Because, honestly, Dan Marino could just say, no, she kidnapped me, the end. Like, there was no reason he couldn't have fixed the situation instantly. But so yeah. Dan Marino tells Ace, and so Ace is like, all right, well, my associates just informed me of something. And then he turns Einhorn around. And on the underpants on the back, there's just this massive wiener bulge on the back, on the back of the thing.
Oh my gosh.
And of course everyone vomits because just that's what you do. So anyways, he saved the day. And then he ends up beating up an Eagles mascot when he's on the sidelines of the Super Bowl.
Who doesn't want to do that?
Yep. So, good for you. So trivia, act trivia. The voice and manner of speaking for Ace was added by Jim Carrey after getting the role and reading through the script many, many times. He's just like, this script sucks. It doesn't sound good. And he finally decided to do something he'd been doing from his stand-up acts. So he did kind of the voicing and pacing that he normally did for that, and also added the alrighty then, which apparently was also part of his stand-up acts in the past. And if you're wondering what I mean by all the alrighty then, because you live in a hole, here it is.
Alrighty then.
So
let us never speak of it again.
Yeah. So then he decided he's like, yep, that sounded much better. The giant hook. So this was apparently at the end of the scene. He did like, there was like a giant swinging hook, that he used to knock off, two of Einhorn's henchmen. Just like they've got, you know, pushed in the water or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Originally was supposed to knock their heads off.
Oh, okay.
And the filmmakers decided, you know what? Maybe we just have them live instead, because I'm like, why would you just be like, we just need to have like out of nothing, like with no murder, we need to just have a little bit of murder in this. So,
wow. Anyways,
originally Ace was not written to be animal related, but more of a generic Sherlock Holmes parody. Screenwriter Jack Bernstein came up with the pet detective idea after watching a David Letterman sketch about pet owners. So apparently it would have just been Ace Ventura, detective.
just guy with the smarts. Interesting. But I have something topical. Just before we started recording, I happened to see on the news that apparently Lady Gaga's dog walker
missing.
Was shot. And
her dogs were kidnapped after they killed him. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was just like, topical.
Yeah, I know. Like, it's weird. Like, we need to get Ace Ventura topical. On the job there.
Someone needs to call Jim Carrey. I'm sure he saw the story and was like,
got half $1 million, I think, for finding the person. So.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah, that's rough. It's really shitty people just to kill somebody just to steal a dog. Anyways.
I don't think the person that was killed.
Oh, they just got shot. Okay.
Yeah.
So in a 2011 interview, director Tom Shadyac admits that when he first saw the film, he was worried that it might end the career of he and Jim Carrey. So apparently he felt real good about it. The ass-talking scene, where he like used his butt to talk, actually started when he was doing In Living Color.
Really?
He was so apparently frustrated one day. So apparently Keenan Wayans had constantly been rejecting so many of his pitch sketches. Jim Carrey stood up and read the sketch from his butt in Wayne's direction. The two almost fought before Wayne's walked out of the room. And later he said, we sat down and everything was cool. I just was like, "Why you got so mad because he was talking out of his butt?"
Oh my gosh.
Anyways.
What a weird dick move.
Yeah. So here's the weirdest just sentence, like apropos of nothing. Rick Moranis turned down the role of Ace Ventura.
Oh, well.
Rick Moranis, like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Rick Moranis.
Yeah,
I think there's been obviously a resurgence of Rick Moranis after he got attacked or whatever in New York, like several months back, and everybody was like, "We must protect Rick Moranis," and I feel that vibe still really strongly. Evidently, the film originally was supposed to have a detective just be a real dunce, more so than like really wild and crazy. He was just supposed to be kind of like a Mr. Magoo type situation or something like that. Or I guess more of an Inspector Gadget type situation where he's just a fucking idiot and Penny saves the day every time. You probably didn't watch Inspector Gadget, though, so you don't understand.
I did.
Okay.
Brief. I mean, I have vague memories of it.
It's just
a
random reference, but yeah. So I just thought this was clever. So they visit a mental hospital at one point where Ace pretends to be a patient and Courtney Cox is his caretaker. The name of the hospital was Shady Acres Mental Hospital, which was named as such for director Tom Shadyac, which if you look at the words Shady Acres directly next to each other, it's Shadyac and then R-E-S. So his name was built into the name of the thing. You get it?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So I thought
it's
that
whack.
Was,
it's
weird, but I thought it was cute.
It is cute.
And lastly, in addition to mentioning earlier about Rick Moranis, evidently also Judd Nelson and Alan Rickman were considered for the lead roles.
What?
I think, do you remember
Rickman?
Judd Nelson? Yeah, do you remember both these guys? Judd Nelson.
I don't know Judd Nelson. I have to look that one up.
Yeah, anyways. And yeah, so it just, I'm like, those are so different than what it looks like. But that's the thing. When people change their mind about what a movie's going to look like, and it completely changes everything. So,
Breakfast Club.
Yeah. So
interesting.
So that's Ace Ventura.
We did it, guys.
We done did it.
Carrie versus Carrie. We did DiCaprio versus DiCaprio. Now we're doing Carrie versus Carrie.
Equally iconic.
Equally. Soups equally iconic. Well, thank you, Andy. Boy, it was good to do this again.
Yeah.
After
was so giddy this entire time. Every time we started both that and the break from the break at the beginning and in the break, I was like, I am so glad we're doing this again. I'm so stoked. So
I know, me too. And guess what? We get to do it again next week.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
We'll probably take it for granted and hate it again.
For sure. For sure. Well, in the meantime, let's wrap this one up and hand it off to our listeners to enjoy. Where to find us at 90s Court, excuse me, on Facebook and Twitter at 90s Court. Instagram is 90s.court. And we are, of course, on patreon.com/90s Court. If you'd like to support the show and join us and the rest of the Patreons over there as well. As always, we'd love it if you could leave a nice 5-star rating or review wherever you listen to us, especially on iTunes. And of course, do not forget to get that sweet, sweet merch.
The merch is so good, guys. I love it.
Real quickly before I forget, is teepublic.com/user/the90s court. Very cool. And that's linked on our Facebook and Twitter and Instagram somewhere, but feel free to just ping us if you need that sent to you. Right before the snowstorm hit, my sweatshirt came in for our 90s court. And I wore it like 3 days in a row. I was like, I'm so comfortable and so sad. But like even my son was drawing, he drew like the 90s court logo with Stay Rad on it. I was like, that's pretty cool. That's pretty adorable. Cool. So
yeah, I wear mine in a rotation because I have two 90s court logo ones plus another one. I just wear those three like all the time because obviously I wear hoodies all the time here.
You got to,
since
man.
I'm not going out in public very much.
Don't do it. It's terrible out there from what I've heard. So, all right. Well, that was this week's episode 73 of 90s Court. I'm so happy to be back on the horn with you guys. And it's good. It's good. Let me ask you, do you have any final parting remarks, Andy?
No, I just liked it. It was kind of like Lisa's like, I don't remember how we dismount from this.
I don't remember. I'm not sticking the landing, but I feel like some of our fans will be
fucking crushing the dismount. Anyways, we love you guys. You all are amazing. And we'll catch you next week with episode 74.
Awesome. See you later, guys.
Stay rad.